You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another Bruin who I thought had a strong night and I think passed the test for us against a strong opponent would be Linus Ullmark. I don't fault him on the Hagel goal. I don't fault him on the Hedman goal, the game-winning goal, because he kind of got taken out by his teammate there. The Kucherov goal, you know, but I mean, it's off a face-off. It's bang-bang. And I thought he had a ton of point-blank chances, especially in the last 20 minutes when the Bruins got a little careless with the puck. There were a lot of turnovers down low, and I thought Ullmark was there to bail him out, and he gave him a chance up until the very end, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really more of the same. Like, it feels so repetitive to come on after every game and be like, oh, goaltending was great, but it just has been.
Me writing the section, like the explanation of each episode, Ullmark and Swayman, great. Like, in every single description of every single episode.
Yeah, although I do think that with Ullmark losing, giving up three goals, I think Swayman now moves back ahead of him in terms of stats over like the last month and a half, 2 months. They've been going like neck and neck, where I think Swayman was a little ahead. And then oddly enough, Swayman giving up two goals on 22 shots dropped him behind Ullmark again, like over this last 20 game stretch or so. And so now Ullmark probably dropped back below him. But yeah, they've both had just this unbelievable stretch where it's like their numbers are off the charts over what's basically now like a 2 month stretch since either one of them struggled at all, or certainly struggled for like multiple games.
See, I think this is a notable game to bring up Ullmark, because anytime you are lining up across the ice from Vasilevsky, especially when you are the individual who is the favorite for the Vezina, I think there's a lot of eyes on that game. And I think in many ways it's Ullmark. Anytime you can play against Vasilevsky, it's kind of a measuring stick game for Ullmark in his mind, probably because Vasilevsky has been the gold standard the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years and at that position. So I thought on the road, in a game where his team wasn't as strong defensively in front of him as they usually are, I thought he was excellent. And because, you know, I bring it up because as good as the goaltending has been this year, I think that as we get closer to the playoffs, you're going to hear a lot of pundits and just media personalities, and maybe some fans too. They're going to try to think to themselves, well, what could possibly go wrong for the Bruins in the playoffs this year? Because everything's gone their way and they're the favorites, blah, blah, blah. And I think one thing that people are going to hang their hats on is, well, the Bruins goaltending is unproven in the playoffs. So any opportunity in the regular season, you get a chance to see Ullmark and Swayman gear up for a game. Like, it is a playoff game. It's notable to me. And I thought that he passed that test with flying colors tonight, despite the losing effort.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, as far as like the playoff storyline goes, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you can't do it until you get there. You know, like, I know, yeah, they both started games in the playoffs last year, but obviously it's only one series. So it's like, okay, yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe they do both flop, but the fact that you have two of them gives you a lot more hope. Like, you know, you would think if one does struggle at all, the other would be ready to go. And by the way, that's going to be, if this continues, that could be an interesting conversation that we're having down the line, because I think obviously everyone most of this season has been operating under the assumption of like, okay, you want to keep Ullmark fresh, but look at the season he's having. He's obviously the guy come playoffs. And I think that's probably still true, but if they're like alternating starts and they're both playing at an elite level, like they have been for nearly 2 months now, like I wonder, you know, like how quick would the trigger be? Like, would Swayman get a chance at some point? Like, how would that work? Because again, this is now, you know, way down the line and a lot of things can change, but the way that they're going right now, it's like you have to feel great with either one of them in there.
I know I do. I know I do for sure. It's just a matter of they haven't been there. So to your point, Scott, it's like it's nonsense to even have your mind go there or worry about that. It's you're gonna blame somebody or put something against them for something they haven't had a chance to do. So I think that's silly.
It's one of those things where like you're looking way ahead and reading way too into it. Like you're doing the what if scenarios that like have really honestly not shown that they're even very likely at all. Like you give it like a 5% chance that both of them are somehow playing bad at the same time, or even that one of them is playing bad at a given time. So you're just thinking like, no, it's really not something you have to worry about until we're like, you know, three games into a series and we're like, oh crap, like two bad games for Ullmark and one bad game from Swayman. What the hell is going on?
So Bridget, here's a what if scenario for you. What if you were calling a game play by play as you often do?
And I will this weekend.
And you will this weekend. And what if you happen to cross the line and make some comments about one's weight? Would you by any chance go into that person's locker room after a morning skate and apologize face to face as one Jack Edwards did this afternoon?
First of all, would never ever say anything like that. And I mentioned that originally, like, especially since I broadcast men's and women's hockey, and broadcasting women's sports, like, and being a woman myself, you know, not to say stuff like that and that it's really not okay. So first of all, wouldn't have made a joke about it. I try not to like find myself making jokes on a broadcast because I don't think I'm that funny. at least in this kind of situation, like when I can't, you know, be 100% like get the tone right. And I know people wouldn't even care if I made a joke, so I don't really joke. But I think that the conversation with Maroon and Jack that transpired was because I believe Jack had tried to reach out to him before and wasn't as receptive, or it kind of just like wasn't able to happen. And
I think they just straight up ignored him. Like it sounds like he put in a request to talk to Maroon, you know, probably by phone, obviously, because at that point Bruins and Lightning weren't in the same city until now. And I think he just got ignored. I think Pat Maroon just had no interest in talking to him unless Jack Edwards was like literally standing right in front of him.
No, whoa, whoa. Not only that, he was on his knees.
Yeah.
He was like literally on his knees, like apologizing, like you see in like a movie, like, please, baby, take me back. Like
Bridget, real quick, just to clarify that first correspondence after the original joke, according to Pat Maroon, who mentioned this on a different podcast, he said that, and I think I told you guys this on back when it happened, but I guess Jack reached out to Tampa PR and basically said, here's my cell, here's my email, whatever, if Pat wants to reach out. And Maroon was like, no, you can call me. So that's why Jack got ignored, essentially, is because the Tampa side of things was like, no, we're not going to reach out to you. You messed up, you call him. And then fast forward to today, and here we are.
Yeah, and like to answer your question that you asked, would I go down and apologize and go to the locker room? I mean, if I genuinely felt like across the line, which I think Jack did, and I think he did feel bad, at least in the public eye, he took backlash for something that maybe he's not comfortable. Like, he hasn't apologized for certain things, so the fact that he did apologize for this means that he actually felt bad and felt like it was necessary, so.
But, I mean, did he even really apologize? Because
he certainly didn't initially.
Like, there was no apology in his first statement about this. And then even today, like, so after this conversation with Maroon, he talked to both Matt Porter, The Globe, and I think he also talked to The Athletic or like one of the Tampa writers. And his comments afterwards were kind of along the lines of like, you know, I feel like people ran with that on social media, like blew it out of proportion. It still wasn't a like, yeah, I screwed up, I'm sorry. Like there was, you know, like an I'm sorry somewhere in there, but it was like still kind of couched in like this all blew up into something bigger than it should have been. And, you know, that like I wasn't trying to be offensive. I was, you know, I tried to give him credit too. Like there was still a lot of like kind of almost like making an excuse for it, or
but like, you know, I do trying feel to
explain
like
it away rather than just saying I screwed up, I'm sorry, that's it.
Yeah, you don't need to go into the extra stuff. Did it get blown up more than it needed to be? I think some players would have left it alone. And if Maroon just didn't say anything, like, we're not having this conversation at all. So I think it depends on the player and like what their past experience was, whether or not the social media part of it was going to go as crazy as it did and how widespread as it was. And also, like, Jack is Jack. I feel like people around the country don't really understand that we hear this all the time and that he just says some crazy stuff, and that's not an excuse, but like, I feel like he's so used to saying stuff like that. He didn't, when it came out of his mouth, he didn't think it was any different or weirder than stuff he says.
I think this was different. Like it, even for him, I thought, you know, he doesn't talk about people's weight or appearances often. Like it was different even for him.
Yeah. Well, wasn't it about pizza?
Well, it wasn't even what he said. It was how long he said it.
Yeah, true.
It got to the point where it was uncomfortable as a listener, because it's like, buddy, we're watching this channel because we're watching the product on the ice. So call what you're supposed to be calling. Like, we don't care to hear about your monologue about Pat Maroon, whether you're complimenting him or shitting on him. And, you know, that's what it came down to for most people. It's like, just Jack. Do your job, right? Just do your job. Like, you can be colorful if you want here and there, but like, just enough. Like, you're drawing attention away from the product on the ice, and that gets annoying at times, you know.
By the way, I on my broadcast, when my color commentator likes to make a stupid pun, I will give him like the dirtiest look I can possibly give him. And we're not on camera, so no one can see it, but I'm just looking at him. And I just highly discourage bad puns and stupid jokes.
Yeah, but if you're gonna go that route, you know, if you're a phenomenal play-by-play person, then I think that it could be forgiven. But if it, you know, if this were a contract year for Jack in the booth, the Maroon stuff aside, it hasn't been a great year from calling games. He's lost his fastball, and you know, there could be one reason or another about that. But regardless, you know, so when that stuff came out on Twitter today, the picture of Jack kneeling down with the Jack swag that he had going on, with the white socks, with the black suit, the white Hanes socks. So I was like, well, I gotta find video of this. So like, you know, 20 minutes later, you know, oftentimes when the Bruins have a big game coming up, I'll go to the opposition's website and just kind of see what the other side's saying going into a game. And definitely I was going to do that for Tampa Bay. So I wanted to watch John Cooper pregame and whoever else Tampa uploaded. And one of them was Anthony Cirelli. And I start watching Anthony Cirelli, and I sent this to you guys, and all of a sudden right behind him, it was like a sitcom. It was Jack and Maroon having a conversation. I was like, how has this not gone viral? Like, everybody's trying to get the dirt on this interaction. All you have to do is just go on Tampa's website. And so between the reporters asking Cirelli questions and Cirelli answering them, and just chatter you hear in the locker room during these scrums, it was tough to make out what was being said. But I texted you guys a few things that Maroon, I could for sure hear Maroon say to Jack. And the one thing Maroon said to him was, you gave me a backhanded compliment, which tells me Jack was probably saying to him what you guys said, like I was just teasing. I there was plenty of times I was complimenting you during the stretch, and Maroon probably said what I just said. You gave me a backhanded compliment. How would you wouldn't like it if I said that about your son or your daughter? And then you also hear Maroon say something like, "Do you want me to step on the scale and you can see what I weigh or something like that. So, and what's funny is this video, it's Maroon's face is facing the camera, but all you can see is the back of Jack's head. So you just see Jack's head just kind of like still and like nodding here and there and whatnot. I sent you guys a video. It's pretty funny, but pretty wild circumstance.
Yeah. And the fact that that wasn't recorded makes me like wonder whether or not like that wasn't like actually like reporters around. It makes me think maybe the team said like this is just like a side conversation, but it's right there in the middle of the locker room with like reporters around. So if that had happened in the Bruins locker room, someone would have had to say like, you can't like record this conversation. Otherwise every reporter would have been right around it.
No, I think people are smart enough in that, in a situation like that, like you know, when something's one-on-one and meant to be private. So,
well, why do you know,
occasionally there's a reporter who like occasionally there's a reporter who doesn't know better and butts in, but generally people can tell with that stuff.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a private conversation. What I more meant is it was picked up because of where it was in the background.
Well, yeah, it was still in a public setting. Like, the locker room's open. So, yeah, other media's in there. Other players were around. Like, Matt Porter of the Globe had an anecdote of, like, Ian Cole was just watching, and Matt quotes him as saying, like, I'm just hanging around to make sure Patty doesn't rip his head off. Like, so, you know, guys are like almost like joking about it, like as it's happening. So yeah, just crazy scene. Like, I'm sure Jag would have preferred it to be like out in the hallway, truly be one-on-one, but like to the point I made earlier, if you're Pat Maroon, like you're not going to go out of your way to accommodate it. So yeah, if he wants to come in here and do it, you know, in front of everyone, then okay. Like, I'll talk, but
that's maybe exactly
Jack,
it.
Maybe Jack was safer with witnesses.
What Scott just said is exactly how it went down, too. You can just tell, like, because in the picture, Pat's taking off his skates, and he's not even looking at Jack. He's literally just taking off his, untying his skates, like, his head's down. So, you know, they got off morning skate, and, you know, somebody in PR went up to Pat and just said, hey, like, Edwards is here. Like, do you want to talk to him? And Maroon probably just said, I mean, yeah, fine. Just Scott just said, like, yeah, he can come in here. I'm not going out there, though.
Yeah.
So that was that. Hopefully this puts the whole thing to bed.
it does feel like it's just in general, it's something that I feel like at every turn where like it could have been sort of like died down or, you know, kind of reined in, it's just blown up bigger, like on both sides. And, you know, like for Pat Maroon, it's, you know, look, like if you don't like someone talking about your weight, like fine, totally understandable. I wouldn't want someone talking about my weight, but like, I don't know. I mean, you couldn't have just like talked to him by phone at some point. And that's what it means. Like, Jack could have called him. He could have called, like, it never had to get here really on either side. And just feels like both of them kind of didn't handle it very well.
I think, but, yeah, I think Maroon, like, I'm just spitballing based off of what I've heard him say about the situation. I think he cares more about the fact that Edwards went viral and got so much publicity because of it, and that his message about teasing somebody of body image is now at the exposure of people who might be going through shit like that. I think that's what Maroon was more so upset about, was how much exposure that rant got, more so than what it was actually said, because, you know, that's my two cents on it. I think Maroon hated the fact that it blew up, and that, you know, other people that might be self-conscious had to hear it. And I don't know. I mean, that's what was said. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think I tweeted this out, like, well, so we'll see them in the ring at WrestleMania 39. I think that's in Los Angeles this year. And that'll be that. And they'll settle all filmy business right then and there. So,
can you really take a guy seriously who twice tonight said tilt-a-whirl in a broadcast about hockey?
I mean, look, Jack.
Him and Brick were not on the same page on that one, because Brick's like, you can trademark that. And then Jack's like, Martian said it this morning. So,
well, I mean, the broadcast. Did
he know? I have no idea. I don't know.
The broadcast got off to a wild start tonight when they had their monologue, and the last thing Jack says is, coming up next, Bruins and Lightning, Eastern Standard Time. And Jack's like, Brick's like, what?
And then he's like, he looks at him like, do you get it? Do you get it?
You can hear the crickets through the screen. And, to your point, Bridget, Jack, we get it. You're saying that both of these teams are the gold standard in the East and they're playing like blah, we get it. But
I don't think everyone got it, including Rick, but
say it took me 10 seconds. I was like, what? I was like, oh, I see what he's saying. Okay.
But I was watching it with a few people. The room was split on who understood what the fuck was going on. But crap. Now I forgot what I was gonna say. But I was gonna say Brian and I have both been producers at WEI, and we like to play cricket noises to people, and we just play, little noises out of news boss and whatnot. And I feel like if Brian was producing that, he would have hit the crickets, and it would have made a lot of sense.
I would have just I would have just left the studio. I would have stopped producing. I'll tell you this much: if Jack had a dollar for every time he said that's the coin that won't get tossed, which you talk about all the time, Bridget, the guy would be the richest guy in the world. Now, what was the thing you told me, Bridget, in the past about this Jack Edwards drinking game that people play? It's like a Jack Edwards bingo. You played a Jack Edwards drinking game, didn't you, or something like that?
I've seen the Jack Edwards drinking game, and it's just all the key phrases: coin that won't get tossed, tumbling muffin. what are the other ones? Can of corn.
There's so many.
There is. He was round. He's been rounding the bases pretty much every game. So.
Yeah, yeah. His slugging percentage is through the roof this year. All right, kids. Was there anything else you wanted to go over? We're about just at an hour right now.
Speaking of fights, Connor Clifton had a good one with Corey Perry tonight. Good for him sticking up for himself, because Perry kind of threw a cheap shot at him. Clifton had already been hit, lost the puck, and Perry comes in late and catches him up high. So, then Clifton went over, first gave him a good cross check that I thought he was going to get called for a penalty on. I thought the ref was going to catch that, miss the initial hit, get the retaliation. But didn't call anything there. And then, Perry wants to go with him. Clifton obliges and gets the win, giving up some size against Perry. And, I think that's something that a lot of NHL players would like to do is take down Corey Perry, because he's made a very long, he's had a very long career of toeing the line.
Yeah. And to your point about the cross check not being called, the ref was right there. And it just shows that I had no idea what was a penalty in this game. Nobody knew what was going to be a penalty and what wasn't going to be a penalty. But no, and Clifton did give up size. And it's funny, because when I first saw their weights listed, I was kind of shocked. I was like, I didn't realize Corey Perry was that much bigger than Clifton. Clifton's kind of small, just to, put that into it. But you think of him as a little pest, right? Not like a somebody that's going to have size on a guy in a fight. But Clifton is a little bit small.
Yeah, Perry's got some size to him. He's got some height to him. Another thing worth mentioning, too, is obviously, like we'd said earlier, Taylor Hall went into Vasilevsky. Wasn't that violent at all. And obviously, Tampa took exception to that. On the other end of the ice, a period later, Ross Colton, that was legit, went into that. Nobody pushed him in, and he kind of gave Allmark a shoulder, and Derek Forbert took exception to it. And that scene in The Christmas Story when Ralphie finally beats up the bully? And he sits up and he wipes his nose, he got all the blood on himself. That's what Ross Colton looked like. I don't know when it happened or how it happened, but clearly something happened. Forbert looked like he broke his nose or something like that, because he was bleeding for a while.
Yeah, I was wondering if Forbert, either, not that Forbert himself scratched him because he still had his glove on, but did he drag his chin strap across or something? I was wondering if someone scratched Colton, because it didn't look like he got punched or banged into the glass or anything like that. So I was wondering if something got his visor, maybe got pushed in, something like that.
I thought it was when Forbert pushed him into the boards, and then Ross Colton went down. I think once that scrum ensued, I think maybe the shaft of a stick maybe caught him across the bridge.
Yeah, I thought. And Forbert was also playing with gauze up his nose from very early on, because he got high sticked in the face.
Yeah, but you would think that between intermissions they'd get it to stop. I was surprised to see it just stay in there for all 60 minutes.
Just chilling. Don't need to breathe out of that nostril.
Yes,
yeah. So I'm, as a person who, fortunately, like, I don't get nosebleeds nearly as much as I used to, but I am someone who, when I get a nosebleed, like, it is very tough to stop. Like, it takes me a long time. So I can sympathize with Derek Forbert on not being able to get it to stop.
Yeah, I can't wait till next episode. Scott just pops on pops on here with gauze up his nose. Scott, your nose bleeding? What? No, I just wanted to put some gauze on my nose. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Nosebleeds can be tough in the winter too with the dry air, but any event.
They're in Tampa.
No, I know. I'm talking about I get nosebleeds too up here in the winter sometimes, and they can be hard to stop. But I just kinda like blow my nose and try to now I'm getting too graphic. So. No need to go there. I think everybody's starting to puke now listening. So, okay, guys, I'm good. You good?
All yes. Good.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We will speak next after the back-to-back this weekend in Florida and in Carolina. Thanks for listening and enjoy your weekend.